Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of BackSportsPage.com.
And that's really all you really needed to hear from Randy Zellia today. I guess it's going off automatically. Sean, should I blame you?
I was about to sing Meet the Mets, so I guess this is better.
I don't know. Do more people care about Backsports Page or the Mets?
It's a fine line these days.
It seems to be.
It's a fine line. The Mets are taking a little bit of a downswing. It's probably not the number one discussion today on Seth and Sean Sports. If you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846, and we have two responses to our question of the day. So please call in or email us at Seth and Sean Sports at gmail.com. The question of the day, which we'll be talking about for like 3.5 minutes if we don't get any more responses, is what was your most memorable moment of the last Olympic Games, which just concluded on Sunday? But we have a lot to go over. There's a lot of drama going on in sports these days. Hope Solo with the U.S. women's team and Coach Ryan. Some guy, I don't even know what to call him anymore, is it Johnson or Ocho Cinco, headbutting his wife and no longer playing in the NFL as of today. The Dwight Howard saga has finally ended, or so we think it has ended, until at least next year. Yeah, there's been a little bit going on. Hi, Seth.
Yes. Sean, how you doing? Yeah, it's been interesting. The Chad Johnson marriage has lasted half as long as the Kim Kardashian, Chris Humphries' wedding. So we have that, which I think should take up all about 12 seconds of our time. As we joked 2 weeks ago, we're meant with sincerity that we were not discussing Dwight Howard or Penn State ever again, or until at least there was a reason to, not realizing that a week later we were going to have to discuss, well, Dwight Howard.
And we might actually have to discuss Penn State, too.
Oh, because of their accreditation?
No, because of North Carolina.
What about North Carolina?
Ooh, did Sean come up with something that Seth doesn't know? Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Sean comes up with a lot of things that Seth doesn't know.
Let's talk about Mr. Howard's neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused. Now, you're
all of Orlando.
Yeah. Now, let me see if I understand this correctly. The Nets offered an above-average, top-10, 25-year-old center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not a center at Howard's caliber, but a good center.
Mm-hmm.
A better-than-average power forward who they were going to be able to cut after this wave after the season. 4 first-round
mm-hmm.
picks. And an up-and-coming potential star at the two guard. Instead, I may be embellishing the star, but a solid potential two guard.
Okay.
Instead, they got Aaron Afalo, Al Harrington, 2 first-round picks from Denver and Philadelphia, respectively. A couple rookies. Do they really just not want him going to Brooklyn? Because there is no logical reason for this trade in my mind.
Okay. Well, first of all, it was 3 first round picks, not 2, that went, and they're all lottery protected. So they're not in the top 13 picks. Now, if you're Rob Hennigan, first of all, I think neither one of those two trades was the best trade they could have gotten. Best trade they could have gotten was the Rockets, if that was actually out there. What Rob Hennigan, the new general manager for Orlando, replacing the abominable Otis Smith. Now, remember, also in this trade, they were able to get rid of Jason Richardson's contract, which had another 3 years of $24 million. However,
And this is why the Houston deal was so much better. They were going to get 3 first-round picks, 3 rookies, Kevin Martin, and be able to take off all their bad contracts and start over.
Yeah.
This year, the Nets trade. Okay, so let's put the Nets trade in perspective, okay? It's not necessarily, well, okay, the potentially Nets trade. Obviously, we don't know what was offered and what wasn't. But let's say what you said was offered. So Marshawn Brooks, Chris Humphries, and Brock Lopez, and 3 first-round picks, right? Or 4. Okay. The 4 first-round picks, we're all gonna, let's assume Dwight Howard goes to the Nets. The 4 first-round picks are going to be in the 20s, right?
At most least, likely.
All right, so 20 to 25, somewhere. At least with these 3, they have the potential of being between 15 and between 13 and 20. Okay? It makes them a little better. I wouldn't say it makes them a lot better, but it makes them a little better. Mo Harkless, they love down in Orlando. So that's one thing. And they like him better than Jeremy Lamb, obviously, also they would have taken the Houston deal. Number 2, Brock Lopez signed a 4-year, $68 million contract. Max money. Is Brock Lopez worth max money?
No. But
you think he is or he isn't?
No, I don't. But I also think that he was going to get max money regardless.
Right. But the question is, did Orlando want to be saddled with a max money player that wasn't worth max money? We're comparing the contract. We're comparing the deals. So in order to make that worthwhile, in order to count Brock Lopez as part of that deal, you have to assume that they're going to re-sign him for max money because he was going to get a thumper, right? Okay. Chris Humphries got a 2-year, I believe it was $18 million deal, and the deal that he was going to get from Orlando was a 1 or 2 year, and he wasn't going to take less than $24 million for the 2 years. Is he worth $12 million? I'm not sure about that.
Probably not.
Remember, Paul Millsap earned 8. Just as a barometer. Nicholas Batum got an offer sheet for $12 million a year. And just putting it in perspective here. So basically, now you're signing 2 guys who you probably don't want for the money that they're being paid. So you'd have to reroute them somewhere else. Marshawn Brooks. I mean, granted,
fine.
All right. He's a young player. He's good. Whatever. They were going to be able to deliver Dwight Howard to the Nets for that package. And they were also supposed to take off the contract of Kiko Turkoglu, who was a $12 million player this year and a $4 million player next year due to the buyout. So basically, the Magic were going to saddle themselves with at least $40 million worth of salary for 3 players, maybe $35 million worth of salary for 3 players, who probably were not worth that amount of money. So they were then getting back into the concept of signing players for too much for the value that they were. So sort of like a Rashard Lewis, which they couldn't wait to get rid of. So much so that they traded him for Gilbert Arenas. So the question is, now they've gotten an Arwell Follow, who is a good player. He may be one of the best wing defensive players in basketball. Unfortunately, he got traded for the best wing defender in basketball, but he's a decent player. He got a 4-year, I believe it was $31 million contract, so he's earning $8 million a year. He's got 2 more years in that deal. Two more years in that deal. And they got Al Harrington, who has this year he's earning, I believe it's 6 or 7, maybe 8. The next year, he's going to be bought out for 4. So after this year, they have $8 million on the cap for the entire deal and 3 first-round picks. Turkoglu comes off the cap,
Baby Davis has one more year on the cap, and they basically can start all over again.
Well, then why do you re-sign Jameer Nelson?
Well, that's
Jameer
the
Nelson
big question.
Is an average point guard. Who's
that
had
is
about
the $64,000 question. If you were
I believe he was signed to a 3-year, $24 million, something. I don't have numbers
spot
in front
on.
Of me.
No, spot right, on. Good, 3 years, $24 million, $8 million a year. There is absolutely no reason why they signed Jameer Nelson. And I believe Jameer Nelson was signed. No, he was signed
as an incentive
and came back.
Yeah,
but
was he signed as an incentive to keep Howard?
Right. That's it.
Yeah. Now, who do you think made out the best?
Well, let's go through all the teams. You got so each team gave up a first-round pick. It was the Lakers gave up one, the Nuggets gave up one, and the 76ers gave up one. Now, are we assuming that both – so the 76ers got Jason Richardson and Andrew Bynum. When we make this analysis, are we assuming that Andrew Bynum re-signed?
Under the assumption that they re-signed Bynum.
Okay, and under the assumption that the Lakers re-signed Dwight Howard?
Yes.
Okay. So here we go. So we've established what the Lakers got Dwight Howard, and the Nuggets got Andre Iguodala, who is one of the most underrated players in the NBA, and anybody that watched the Olympics knows how good defensively he is.
Yeah. I don't know how underrated he is at this point, but he's a very, very solid player. I think he's one of those players where he got to a point where everyone said forever, Ben Wallace syndrome, where you became so underrated for so long that you're really no longer underrated.
Well, except for the fact that Ben Wallace couldn't shoot the brick out of a barn.
I'm not comparing them as players. I'm comparing them just as the nicknames that they received.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And once again, we've established that Andre Iguodala is not a number one, right? He's a number two.
Yes.
We went through the whole concept. Now, it is my belief that in Philadelphia, Andrew Bynum will become a number one. Are you of the same opinion?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if he becomes a number one, the team that made out the best was the 76ers.
And that's actually where I would go, because I also kind of like Jason Richardson for Philadelphia. Yes, his contract's a bit high, but compared to some of the other ones we've seen, I don't think it's obscene. They need scoring, and he's a good scorer. You know, that's what he will be. He's a good addition to that team. And I think it's kind of being thrown under the radar a little bit because he is a bit overpaid, but not. There are worse contracts out there. And he will give you 18 to 20 points a game, which, you know, the Sixers, led by Doug Collins, have been such a defensive-laden team over the last couple of years, and that's gotten them to, you know, a modicum of success. But, you know, they need scoring. They do not have a bona fide number one scorer. They may have one now in Bynum, and they barely have a number two scorer. Because I forget who Lou Williams signed with. Is it Indiana?
Atlanta.
Okay. So your number one scorer is, you know, between Richardson and Evan Turner and Drew Holiday, there's, you know, some mixing and matching of all these players. And I think Philly got off really well with this.
Yeah, we went around the league last year when we were talking about the NBA and how many number ones there were, and I think we came up with about 15. And Bynum, obviously, what was that?
I said give or take.
Yeah, give or take 15. Well, now there's 16. Because while Andrew Bynum wasn't a number one on, and we didn't include Dwight Howard as a number one, because he's
well,
not.
Well, I was about to say, did we include Howard as a number one?
I don't believe we did, because I don't think offensively we ever considered him a go-to scorer, especially with his foul shooting. So I think now there's one more, because Andrew Bynum is a very good player, and he is now, he's the top center in the East, certainly offensively and maybe all around. I mean, who are the centers in the East now?
it's him and Chris Bosh, if you include Bosh as a center. And Tyson Chandler.
Well, I don't include Tyson Chandler as a scorer. You have five above average centers for all intents and purposes in the East. The three you just mentioned, Roy Hibbert and Brooke Lopez. Kevin Garnett is obviously Kevin Garnett is as well. But you never really know, is he a power forward, is he a center, what is he?
Well, I'll take Bynum over any of them.
I agree.
If any team made out, the 76ers went from a team that had four number twos to a team that now has a number one and three number twos.
Yeah. The question is, will Doug Collins be able to handle Andrew Bynum? Bynum is known, I don't want to say a head case because I don't actually think that's the right word, but he beats to his own drummer. And Doug Collins does not have patience for that kind of attitude. And
well, the last time that Doug Collins didn't have patience for a young scorer, he got fired. A guy named Phil Jackson came in and then won six championships. If that happens in Philly, I think they'll be okay.
Well, Phil Jackson is available.
And Philadelphia does have money. But, I mean, obviously the Lakers make out. I mean, they get the best player. And he fits their system. Watching him and Steve Nash do a pick and roll this winter is going to be amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, let's see here. Okay, so we're going to have Ron Artest, because he's now Ron Artest again. We're going to have Ron Artest basically standing in the backcourt waiting for the fast break so he can just play defense because they certainly don't need him on offense. They're going to have Steve Nash and Dwight Howard running a pick and roll. They're going to have Paul Gasol at the elbow just to facilitate everything. And Kobe Bryant's going to be a spot-up shooter. Huh. That seems like a pretty unstoppable offense to me.
Are they now your favorites in the East, in the West?
Oh, no, because I don't think they'll stay healthy. And I don't think they have depth.
No, see, that's the problem I see. I still would put Oklahoma above them just because they are not particularly athletic. They're old. And they are not deep.
That's the interesting question here because the one team that needed defense more than any other team in the NBA, who was it?
Is this rhetorical, or should I actually answer?
Let me hear who you think.
There was one team that needed defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers are probably right up there.
Okay. Well, the two teams that needed defense got it in this trade.
Denver and the Lakers.
Denver was the worst defensive team in the league last year. They were the third best offensive team in the league last year. So what did they do? They traded Aaron Aflalo for a better Aaron Aflalo.
Well,
because Iguodala is Aaron Aflalo on steroids.
Do you think this puts Denver in the race?
No, because they don't have a number one still. But I'll tell you, Denver, I think Denver can knock out the Lakers. I don't think that they can win a championship, but I think they can knock out the Lakers. I think they may be the most entertaining basketball team in the NBA this year. Them and the Pacers.
The Pacers?
And I know that sounds very, very strange.
Yes, I'm not quite sure I understand the Pacers.
Well, I think the Pacers are just like them. They're athletic, and they run. Except for Hibbert, that team is incredibly athletic. Paul George, George Hill, David West, they are a run-and-gun team.
I don't think West is particularly athletic, but I understand your point. I'm just kind of glad this the whole saga is over. I'm sick of talking about it. It's over for a month or two. It's over until NBA season starts.
Yep. The team that loses the most? The Mavericks.
Yeah, the Mavericks, obviously, with an enormous amount of cap space and the hope to sign Deron Williams this year, that didn't come to fruition, and the hope that they would possibly get a run at Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. And now you lose Dwight Howard, and Chris Paul was still a potential free agent after this season, and there's no chance that he's going to go to a team without a chance at a title, and that Dallas team is now completely rebuilding.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how Dwight Howard meshes, and that's all going to come down to what Steve Nash does and how Steve Nash plays, because Dwight Howard only fits that offense with Steve Nash, because he doesn't fit Kobe Bryant.
Well, to be fair, not too many offensive players fit Kobe Bryant.
Okay, he doesn't fit Paul Gasol, who many offensive players did. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he meshes, how Steve Nash takes these four guys who are all, and now Antoine Jameson and who they signed, Devin Eubanks. I mean, they have a glutton of talent, and how he puts it all together, and it's all on Steve Nash, who's 39 years old. I mean, the only other point guard that is more experienced and older than him is Jason Kidd, and he's in New York.
I was going to say, is in jail out in Hempstead right now.
Thank you very much. Anyway, so we do have some NBA. This was our NBA block, I guess. But what's interesting is I did think about this on the train home today, and it's not our question of the week, but it is something that I feel the need to discuss.
Okay.
Which is the most entertaining off season?
For me, it's the NBA. The NHL, I don't care about.
Right. Well, understood.
Baseball, in a lot of ways, is fascinating to me because I actually find baseball off season a lot of times more entertaining than the actual season.
Of course you do, because you don't find the season entertaining whatsoever until the playoffs.
Exactly. And the problem with also baseball, which you can't include it because the baseball draft is during the season. The NBA and NFL off seasons are fascinating because you have the drafts in off season, and you have obviously all the free agent moves. And there are more free agent moves, although this year was kind of an anomaly in that regard, but usually the NBA free agent moves are bigger and more, I guess, louder, for lack of a better term, than the NFL. This season it wasn't quite as much so, but I think the NBA... I also just think the NFL regular season is better than the NBA regular season, so it's a higher bar for the NFL offseason to hit. And I compare it that way. So I'd say the NBA.
I was just thinking about that because, remember, I think in the NFL you have a draft offseason, you have a free agency offseason, then you have a training camp offseason. Like, there are three very definitive times in the offseason. In, like, April, you're looking for... So your off-season in football is basically your off-season, like the dead period. It's probably, what, a month and a half? From the Super Bowl to, like, the middle of March. Then you start talking about the draft. And the draft occurs in the last weekend in April in New York. Then you start talking about free agency, because free agency is right about that time. Because after the draft, you want to sign all your great free agents. Then you come to about now... Or in July, when you start talking about OTAs and training camp. And then you start the season on September 5th. In basketball, you have your draft and your free agency are all in the same 2 months. So the season ends in June. It doesn't start again until October. But everything is basic. I mean, this is an anomaly as far as I'm concerned with all the trades that went on in the last month. And the Olympics, I think, added to it, to the greatness of the offseason. But I think, generally, you are looking at a month and a half of just absolute pandemonium for the NFL, for the NBA. And then baseball is just so long. Pitchers and catchers are in February. You end in November. So you have a longer period of time for baseball offseason than anything else. And they're not broken up. It's just, and there are many more players, too. So just something I was thinking about. And the NHL may not have an a regular season this year, so the offseason may be 24 months long.
Well, they went through that about 10 years ago, and it almost destroyed the league. It would take a little, I think, considering the successful, and I think they had a very successful playoff year they had this year, I think this is the last thing that they would want. But we'll see, and we're not going to really go into hockey because we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, so if you want to give us a call, 760-283-0846, we're taking calls, we're taking dates for Seth, anything is wrong.
Yeah, that's what I need right now, more dates.
Go sit on Seth's deck and enjoy his grill.
Actually, I'm being bitten alive, so I'm moving back onto my living room couch. But one of the more interesting baseball stories, and this, we talked about this in the beginning of the year, was the Steven Strasburg 160-inning limit. Now we're at a point, and it's been upped from 160 to 180. And the players are very angry because Washington is the best record in baseball. They're leading their division by 5 games. This is a team that, you know, with him and Jordan Zimmermann and Gio Gonzalez, has the pitching staff to go to a World Series. You're probably not going to a World Series without your ace. What is the right decision here?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's August 14th, 7:25 in the evening. Seth not only, A, introduced the baseball story, but B, named the top 3 pitchers on a team that's not in his city. That's kind of impressive.
If I could play Hail to the Chief right now, I think I would. I thought it was pretty good. Thank you.
Hail to the Chief.
Better than Hail to the Redskins.
Bum, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum,
thank you.
Bum, and the only reason I know that is because Mel Brooks did it in Blazing Saddles.
Yes, he did.
Anyway, so the right decision for who?
The team, for the Nationals. And obviously you can't take it as obviously in the short term it's the wrong decision. You break this into a short term or long term. My feeling is, if you have a legitimate chance to go to the World Series,
yep,
which they do,
yep,
and if you want to bench him for a start here and there, going into the playoffs, assuming they can keep this lead, or give him extra days of rest, I don't have a problem with it. But
okay,
I do not think it is fair to the team, to the fans. If you have a chance at a World Series, this is not something that you throw away. And this guy is 23 years old. I understand you want to be careful. You've seen, you know, that we've seen what happened with Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor. I understand this. But if you can maintain, you know what, you skip every other start, or you take 2 extra days. If you want to do that, fine. But I cannot believe you were going to sit a guy down for the year in September with a legitimate chance to go through October and November.
Okay. I think you're going to see it. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that you're going to see that, because at this point, Mike Rizzo has gone on the record saying it. So if he doesn't do it, he actually looks like worse than if he does at this point. Number two, if I brought you medical evidence that said that sitting down a pitcher for 2 weeks and then revving him back up and then sitting him back down and revving him back up 2 weeks later put more stress on his arm than pitching every day or every fifth day, would that change your mind?
Oh, no. I believe every 2 weeks would be a disaster. But
okay,
I'm saying every fourth start you rest him an extra couple days.
Well,
I don't think that would be
because then you're but then you're ruining your rotation.
Okay, so what would you do? Let me just put it on you. You're Mike Rizzo.
Honestly, I probably do exactly what he's doing. I'm looking out for the long-term benefits of my franchise. I know that this is the best pitcher in the game.
I know that he underwent Tommy John surgery. I understand that the there's been a study by John Heyman. John Heyman, who writes for SI, I think he still writes for SI. He may write for MLB at this point. Every single year, he puts a list together of, quote, red flag pitchers. And what that means is if you pitch 30 or more innings than you pitched the year before, you are a red flag pitcher, which means you are ready for arm trouble. And he's basically been right 60 to 70% of the time. Steve Strasburg last year, I believe, pitched 28 innings. So far, I believe he's up to 150. That's damn right on the red flag list. So I don't have a problem with this. I really, really don't. I understand that this comes along once in a generation, that when you see the goal, you go get it. I'm with you. But if this is the decision that they've made based on medical evidence, I'm okay with that. And I know you're totally taken aback by this because you thought I would definitely go the other way.
I am surprised, but, you know, I understand it. I just disagree with it.
Last year he pitched in 24 innings. The year before he pitched in 68 innings. He is already up to 133 innings this year. That's a lot of innings. That's a lot of increase. If he gets to 180, that is 9 times the amount. That's 900% of what he pitched last year. When he underwent... What's that?
I was going to say, can the Nationals go to the World Series without Steven Strasburg?
Well, right now they're in a pretty good situation. Can they go without him? They have two great pitchers still. Remember, all you need in the playoffs is probably one great pitcher, and if you have two great pitchers, you're gone.
Okay.
I seem to recall a guy named Oral Hershiser making the World Series and winning it for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go actually with the one great one and one very good one in 2001, but I understand your point.
Oh, well, Schilling and Johnson, they were both great. There was no good. Either one of them could have won a Cy Young in any other year. They were great pitchers, 1-1A. Mickey Lolich won 3 games in the 1968 World Series. 1967, you have Bob Gibson winning. I mean, these are examples where one pitcher can take over. It happens all the time. Do I agree with what Mike Rizzo is doing? I think if I am in Mike Rizzo's shoes, I would be okay with what he's doing. If I'm a fan of the Nationals, no, I want my pitcher to pitch. But if you're thinking about it long term, was I okay with Dwight Gooden pitching, having a 24-4 record for that 1 year, and then going 17-6, winning the World Series, or would I have preferred him to go 17-6 and seen him pitch for the next 20 years? Yeah, I'd prefer the latter.
Oh, and to be fair, he also had some other problems in addition.
Agreed, but I was just taking the one great year and saying he never had that year again, ever.
Fair enough. Going from a sublime to the ridiculous, apparently the Red Sox have decided that all of their problems are based on
fried chicken and beer.
Yeah, no, but unfortunately those aren't the problems that John Lester has been unable to pitch this year. The problem is Bobby Valentine.
Right.
And they had a meeting with about 18, 19 players where pretty much telling the ownership that they didn't want to play for him. You know what? I don't like my bosses either. Well, actually, I like my boss
now.
Who
are your boss?
I like my boss now. That's why I get to work from home and work on my deck and sit on my couch. But I don't really think I ever get the chance to fire to go a couple of steps above me and fire my bosses.
You understand this is not the first time this has happened in sports, right?
I do.
You do realize the two biggest examples of this won championships thereafter, right?
You want to give me the examples you had in mind?
Well, one I had already mentioned before, where Doug Collins was told to take a hike.
Okay.
And one was, well, Magic Johnson told Paul Westhead to take a hike. And Pat Riley was brought.
Well, but to be fair, Doug Collins was there for 3 years and led the team to the seventh game of the Eastern Conference Finals. Paul Westhead had taken the team to the NBA final championship 2 years earlier and, you know, led them to a second round exit, I believe, in 81, and then in 82, Pat Riley came in. This has been 3 or 4 months. And this is for a team where they pretty much decided they pretty much folded last year. And, it's, you know, and had a nice, easygoing coach in Terry Francona. And they decided to kind of bring someone in a bit more disciplined. And apparently they didn't. Apparently they're not really they don't really like that either. If you're the Red Sox, now I know the Red Sox have said they will not fire Bobby Valentine during the season. But unless there's some miraculous turnaround, is there any chance that Bobby Valentine survives October if they don't make the playoffs?
None whatsoever. None. I'm a big Bobby V fan. I always actually have been. Back to the mustache. Because I thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. For those that don't remember, Bobby Valentine got thrown out of a Mets game. He was pissed off for getting thrown out. So he put on a fake mustache and came back in the dugout. Now, granted, he was incredibly stupid. But it was incredibly funny, and he won my respect in doing that, because anything it takes to win. He is a smart guy. Nobody will ever say that he's not. But he's lost his team.
I don't think he ever had the team.
Right. I would agree with you. I don't think he ever had him. I think that this was an owner call for hiring Bobby V. I think that they lost their first guy, which was Dale Sven, to the Cubs, and then they just packed and took Bobby V. I don't think he's a good match. I don't think he ever was. I don't think he's a good – I mean, Bobby Valentine, let's understand, has not made all the right decisions either. Bobby Valentine – and not to say that these are excuses, but Bobby Valentine has a radio show in New York. That can't really go over well. I just got to think. So, I mean, he's left out John Lester for 11 runs. The last time I remember somebody leaving a star player out for that long and giving up many runs or goals
is
he
Patrick
was fired the next day. Exactly. He was fired the next day. That was Michelle Therrien, who's now the new coach of
the Montreal Canadiens. And who did he beat out for the out for the job? Patrick Roy.
Yep. So I mean, it's interesting that that managers are supposed to take care of their star players, but really, Bobby V has not endeared himself to any of the star players.
We actually have a caller. We haven't had a caller for a couple of weeks, so we've missed this. Hey, you're on with Seth and Sean.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Evan from Syracuse.
Evan! He makes a return!
The phone may die at any time, so I'll speak fast. Two things.
Are you first time, long time?
First time. No, second time, long time. Big fans of both of you. Followed you throughout
Appreciate both it. Of
your careers. Love you. So keep up the illustrious, amazing work. And, thought maybe Mets were about to be on the board. Anyway, two things. Sean, you're right. Bobby V with the mustache, one of the funniest things I ever saw. It was fantastic. And that little look of him sort of like in the background in the dugout scratching the fake mustache was fantastic. My point that I called in for is Strasburg, okay? And I know you sort of moved off the point, but to limit them to, what is it, 180 innings?
That's what they're saying.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
One, how do you come up with a number like that? And two, what's the point of making it to the postseason if you can't have your ace pitching? I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Right. Thanks so much for your call, Evan. He's pretty much backing me on this, so I think you should respond.
You know, Evan is one of those guys, and we love you, Evan. We really do. He's one of those guys that is a loyal Mets fan. He's been a loyal Mets fan. You heard him say, I thought the Mets were always just going to score a run. Evan, keep up the faith. Keep up the faith, brother. We're with you. So we'll keep going. Chug along, my friend. And to answer your question, where they came up with 180 innings, I think has something to do with the percentage over what he's already pitched in his career. That's number one. Number two, Mike Rizzo has done an incredible amount of research into this. He hasn't just decided it's 180 innings. He's consulted doctors. He's consulted physicians. I guess the physician is a doctor. He's consulted trainers. It's not just, hey, 180 innings sounds like a good idea. So I don't know the actual methodology. That's a big word for me. Methodology behind it, but there is a reason, and by next week hopefully I'll do some research and come up with that reason, or maybe I'll actually call Mike Rizzo and ask him. I'm sure he'll take my phone call.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I were you, I'd ask him for a job first, and
well,
then you can worry about it.
After all, I've had an illustrious career, so I mean, why would he not take my call?
I agree.
For those that are unaware, at one point when Omar Minaya was the GM for the Montreal Expos, he became the Washington Nationals, I did actually apply to Omar Minaya and said I would move up to Montreal for free and work for him. And I got a very nice rejection letter that lasted all of about 7 words. So thank you very much, Omar. Maybe Mike is a nicer guy. Anyway.
Well, to be fair, Omar may be getting those same letters right now while he's applying for jobs.
And that would just be fait accompli.
Spoken like a true attorney.
But anyway, I don't remember where we were before this. Can they make the World Series? Yes. And then we went on, to Bobby V. So I think there's no way that this man makes it next year. I think he'll be once again back in the ESPN studio.
Where he belongs, probably.
Where he belongs.
Point.
I mean, he's a smart guy. And he'd be really good, I think, on a rookie team because he'd be able to teach them. But I know my brother said this, my younger brother, Jay, said this best about Bobby V. He said, Bobby V is like a Buck Showalter. He teaches the team. He gets the team to the cusp of goodness. And then he just can't bring them over the hill. He can't bring them to the promised land. Well, the fact is, the Red Sox have already been to the cusp of greatness. They don't need somebody to get them there. They need somebody to get them over the hill. And he's not that guy. He's not the closer.
You know who he is? He's a more charismatic Buck Showalter.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah. So I'm very impressed. We've gone about 45 minutes in, and we're gonna kind of do a new thing with the show going forward. We're gonna switch back between 60 and 90. We'll see how late we go today, but we're doing a good job kind of turning. We're going around all the sports world. Not that we're about a week away from college football season, but there has been one stunning college football issue. Last year's Heisman candidate from the defensive side, Tyrone the Honey Badger Mateo. I don't really know how to pronounce his last name. I was going to say Mateo, but that just brings up sick memories for me.
Mateo, Stephon Mateo, as the Rangers one step closer. Okay.
Thank you. Very rarely you hear an Islander fan do the Howie Rose impersonation of a Ranger
Howie's
beating
the Devils.
Yeah,
also a Mets guy. Howie's a Mets guy. He will always be a Mets guy to me.
Yeah, well. Talk about two teams that, yeah, whatever.
Anyway, Mr. Matteau or now Mr. I'm not playing for LSU anymore. Has been suspended indefinitely by the coach, LSU head coach Les Miles. He has two options for all intents and purposes: transfer to a D2 or to an NAIA school and play there, or sit out 2012 and come back and play in 2013. And what I find shocking is that apparently he's legitimately contemplating sitting out 2012 and possibly coming back in 2013, even though there's no promise that LSU will allow him to play.
Actually, there has been a new development where LSU has said, no way in hell. He cannot come back to LSU under any circumstances. He can go to school there, but he cannot play on that team ever again. So if he's going to sit out, he's going to sit out and go to another school.
Well, I guess that pretty much, I would have been surprised if he was going to play for two, if he would have stayed at LSU, but to go to an FCS school, McNeese State, something along those lines, an Appalachian State, may make more sense. McNeese State, I know he's visited, and then you're looking at him, and you know, we're not going to go into, obviously we're not even in college football yet. We'll start talking that next week, but you know, you go to the FCS, you see a guy like Jamaris Jenkins, who went from Florida to one of the small schools, I forget which one. And he was still able to be a first round pick. Yeah, well, pretty much because you picked the entire first round.
Well, Janoris Jenkins was a second round pick.
Was Jenkins a second round pick? Okay, my fault.
Second round pick. And according to Mel Kiper and his illustrious due, and the word of the day is illustrious.
You're using all sorts of SAT words today, aren't you?
I am. Well, I have a couple more in my last soliloquy, so stay tuned for that. But I know, you're waiting for it. His illustrious dude, remember, Janoris Jenkins is about 6'1" and a corner. And Honeybacker, Mr. Matteau, is only 5'8". And there's a lot to be said for a 6'1" cornerback. And 5'8" quarterbacks really don't play all that well in the NFL. So his talent, while illustrious and fantastic and super a lot of good superlatives, may not make up for the physical limitations that he may have in the NFL being 5'8". So Mel Kiper has him picked as a second or third round pick right now.
Still more money than I'm making next year. So
combined with me.
Well, but you make significantly more money than I do, as you can tell by the envy in my voice, in case the connotation doesn't come through. So we've gone about 45 minutes in, and if for those of you who are waiting for us to talk preseason football, we're not.
We're not. Nope.
I am astonished by the amount of people who are that interested in the first week of preseason football. People, the Olympics were ending. If you're a baseball fan, baseball's going on. Really? You really think I'm going to be up at 11 o'clock at night watching the Raiders-Seahawks preseason game?
No, but we will promo right now. Next week, we're going to have our fantasy football preview. That's next week. The following week, we are going to have our NCAA football preview, college football preview. And then the final week on the 4th of September, which is the day before the Giants take on the Cowboys in the first game of the regular season, we will have our NFL preview and our NFL picks. So stay tuned for the next 3 weeks. We have a lot. Seth and I have a lot of work to do for preparation, but we're coming to you strong and solid. And we'll give you the best news and best analysis you can find anywhere on the internet.
And I actually want to give a shout out to our listeners. As most of you know, Back Sports page, and actually, Sean, you don't know this, has been changed.
There's something I don't know. Wow.
I'd be surprised if you knew.
That sports page is back. We're getting rid of the Google malware. There is no malware for those who have seen it. It's okay. It's a brand new site. Google just hasn't lifted it yet, which is why we're not publishing too many articles at this point. We're waiting until everything is clear, so there's no problems at all. But what is happening is most of you know is you're listening on Archive. And you go to the site and you're listening because it's on the front page. And we had our most hit. We have, I think, triple our previous hits this week from our prior week.
Wait, this is the Sean Sports Show?
Yeah. We did. Our shows actually between us and Keegan Reed's Off the Crossbar and Foul Territory with Ace of Beale, we're getting over a couple thousand. We got over a couple thousand hits last week for this past week. And this is during a week where there's really not that much going on. So, I'm curious to see where we're going to go when we start going into football season, see how this runs, and when the site's really running strong. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I don't really want to thank everyone for who didn't respond to the great Olympic moments. I'm a little surprised. As I said, I thought that would be a pretty easy response. But we are 50 minutes in, so we probably should hit on that a little bit.
We should. There were a lot of great Olympic moments. I'm one to say that I did not watch as much Olympic coverage as I normally do. I was a little busy. But that being said,
hey-o.
Not that busy. I was just busy. I had a lot of stuff.
Okay.
You know, the whole work thing, the whole research for the show thing. I mean, I got a lot going on. But
you're the only person who I know who subscribes to the 4-hour work week and thinks it's a lot.
The 40-hour work week, not the 4-hour work week.
No, the 4-hour work. I'm talking the 4-hour work week.
See,
you get your work done so quickly and so well. This is a compliment, my friend.
Anyway, that being said, I did not pay as much attention. I did not watch one swimming event, which is normally something I would watch. I did not watch one gymnastics event, which is something I would want to watch. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that of the timing, that it all took place during the day. And as we explained a couple of weeks back, I'm not one that likes to know the score and then go watch the game. My mom actually, every year that I was in summer camp, when I was not able to watch the All-Star game, would record it on one of those VHS tapes that we no longer use. And she would have it when I came home from summer camp at the end of the camp season and say, hey, here's the All-Star game. And I go, hey, I already knew what the score was like 3 months ago. So I never watched it. So I don't do that. I don't watch games where I already know the score. So I wasn't going to do that. But there were a couple of games during the day that I was able to watch, especially while I was on my lunch break or an extended lunch break or took the whole afternoon off or something along those lines. Anyway, the women's soccer, unbelievable. Women's basketball, unbelievable. Men's basketball this past Sunday, unbelievable. But again, there was the badminton teams. Mr. Lipton is IMing me. He's like, that was definitely controversial. That's something that was memorable, I guess. But as I said a couple of weeks back, the thing that is most memorable to me in any Olympic Games is hearing the national anthem when the U.S. wins a gold. I get chills every time I hear the national anthem. So to all those Olympians, to Missy Franklin, to Michael Phelps, to Ryan Lochte, to the women's basketball team, soccer team, men, you guys made the Olympics what it is because I got chills every time you guys won. So those are my memorable moments. I'll take those away.
I'll go a little bit more specific events. Watching, and it's funny, it's the last 2 years, I thought the craziest events have happened on the last night of the Olympics. Last year, it was the men's volleyball team, you know, with their coach's father-in-law getting stabbed, and they would go on to win the gold. This one is actually the 3-meter dive, or I guess it's the platform dive, where this U.S. the top 18 advanced. The U.S. guy David Bedea, I don't think I pronounced the name right, was 18th. So he was the last person to make it, and there was a three-way dead tie or three-way like .05 separating three divers: the British diver Tom Daley, the overwhelming Chinese favorite, and this guy. And they all did dives. Daly had like a 98. Bodai did like 102. And the Chinese guy needed 102 to beat him. I think his name was Kui Bo. He got 101. And it was just shocking to watch his reaction of just incredulousness. I thought was amazing. And the cool part was what Laura Wilkinson, who was the last U.S. diver to win something at that height, which I believe was in 1996. And they showed her leaving the crying her eyes out as she left the pool. I thought that was pretty awesome. We had talked previously about Karani Jones, the first Grenadian, I guess that's the way you pronounce it, winning a gold medal. And he was also exchanged his bib with Oscar Pistorius, the South African amputee or double amputee who ran in two events. I was impressed. For all that you heard about the disaster that London was going to be, their security wasn't great. The first day where they had the issue with the North and South Korean flags. I thought it came off extremely successful. I thought Great Britain really did themselves proud, ending up with the third most medals. And I love the Olympics. I mean, I admit it, I love the Olympics. You know, I would not want to watch it every year, but every 4 years, I think it's an amazing thing to watch. And to watch a gymnast or watch swimming or watch Usain Bolt, who is just ridiculous. The debate will go on. Is he the greatest runner of all time? Possibly, probably, who knows? See if he comes back for Rio in 2016. And what I really love, and this is what I always discuss when we talk the Olympics, are the people that make $35,000 a year and work at Home Depot half the time to be able to put themselves in an opportunity for a once-in-a-lifetime to compete in the Olympics. Kayla Harrison in judo, and Jordan Burroughs in wrestling, the skeet shooters, the archers. That, to me, is what the Olympics are. Yes, watching the U.S. basketball team was great, although I unfortunately wasn't able to watch the finals. Watching the amazingness, and that's really, there is no word to describe how good the U.S. women's basketball team is phenomenal. But I can watch them play at any point. But see, to me, the Olympics aren't about that. The Olympics are these obscure, or watching track. And finding yourself rooting for Sonia Richards Ross, excuse me, or Brittany DeLoach in the high jump, or all these other random people, and the great stories, and Jessica Ennis, because, I just have a crush on Jessica Ennis, just like every other man alive.
Who is not 5'9", mind you.
That's okay. Since when do I ever actually get to date someone who's 5'9"?
That's a good point.
It was enjoyable. As always, I loved it. I'm glad it's over.
Well, I think every 4 years is every 2 years for the different types of sports is definitely worthwhile, and it brings a lot to the table as to somebody asked me the other day what the in the volleyball, and I call it the volleyball and I call it the soccer, and I don't understand why I do that, but let's say in the volleyball, why there is a person that has a different colored shirt that is about a foot shorter than everybody else. And I had to go look it up because I didn't know. And, yes, there are things about sports that I don't know. And that was one of them. And I went and looked it up, and it was the first time in five times during the Olympics I was asked the same question. And the only reason I know it is because of the Olympics, because I don't know about you, Seth. I don't watch volleyball on a daily basis, even a monthly basis or a yearly basis. I watch it once every 4 years. And it's in the Olympics. So, if nothing else, I wouldn't know what European handball was without the Olympics. I probably wouldn't know what the pentathlon was until we looked it up for the show. So, if nothing else, the Olympics allows you to gain an insight into sports and into things and people that you just know nothing about. And for people that love to learn, which I do and I know my co-host does, it's a great opportunity. So do that. Go with that. We're going to finish up here. I know we're going to go a little bit over, but like we said before, we have 90 minutes. But we're going to try and keep it on the 60-minute or so level just to keep everything consistent. And we know that you all have busy lives, and we do appreciate you tuning in. So my last saga is basically to attack David Stern. Now, David Stern is one of the greatest commissioners to ever come down the pike in any sport. And I'm going to use some of the superlatives that my friend Evan Lipton brought forth. He is the preeminent, the eminent. He's not sublime, and he's not resplendent, but he is one of the preeminent commissioners of all time. And he has brought basketball to a new level as far as popularity. But shame on you, sir. Shame on you for thinking that the NBA is bigger than the Olympics. Shame on you for saying that it has to be under 23 years old or want to make a tournament that will rival the World Cup and take away from the Olympics. Shame on you. I understand that would be a multi-billion dollar industry to the NBA owners. I get it. I get that these are your assets, that these players are playing for the good of the country rather than the good of the team. I get that. I get that there's a World Cup of soccer and there's a World Cup of baseball. I get that. But in no other sport, countrywide, in the Olympics, do you get such a dichotomy of age than you do in the basketball leagues. You saw a Spanish team that had a 19-year-old and a 38-year-old. Juan Carlos Navarro, Paul Gasol, Marc Gasol, Ricky Rubio, who didn't get to play. These guys have all grown up playing together, and you want to cut them off at 23 from playing in their country, for their country. Shame on you, sir. Shame on you. The Olympics are the greatest collection of basketball that you can watch. And you're trying to destroy that for some change. No, not in my lifetime. It definitely won't happen in Rio. They've already said there's no chance of it in Rio. And if it happens in any other year, you are basically destroying basketball in the Olympics for everybody but the U.S. At least this year, there was some competition. You take only 23 and under, you're destroying all competition for every other country. We have some new listeners tonight. I know some people from Hoboken have decided to tune in tonight, so I'd like to thank them. And as usual, to our listeners all across the country, great times. And thanks to my co-hosts, this has been, as usual, my greatest hour of the week. So I'll let Seth take it away.
Thank you. Very rarely do you see athletes have any loyalty to any individual team. You know, 5 years here, 7 years, some random guy. Orlando. Johnny Pesky died today, or I should say yesterday.
Yesterday.
Thank you. He was 92 years old. For those of you who don't know Johnny Pesky, it doesn't mean a heck of a lot. For any listeners in Boston, they know who he is very well. Johnny Pesky has been a member of the Boston Red Sox as a player, as a coach, as a broadcaster for 60 years. I don't know if he was a Hall of Famer. He was a borderline player, if nothing else. A borderline Hall of Famer, if not. He was a career 300 hitter. His best friends, actually, with the great Ted Williams. And he was known as one of the most popular players of any decade and any generation. There was a great tweet, and I am not the world's biggest Curt Schilling fan. But I kind of want to read this one. Johnny Pesky was well known for, unfortunately, holding the ball too long in the seventh game of the 1946 World Series. And when they were playing St. Louis, Enos Slaughter hit a hit. Enos Slaughter scored from first on a single, and the Cardinals would beat the Red Sox in seven, which would extend their streak of a non-World Series for another 40, 50 years until 2004. Curt Schilling's tweet: one of my career memories was hugging and kissing Johnny Pesky after we won it all in 2004. God rest and God bless his gentle soul. I'll miss you. This man was so well respected that the Yankees gave him a moment of silence today. Somehow, I don't think you're going to see that happen for too many players in this generation from either side. So, to a great baseball player, to a great man, God rest your soul. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens, Seth and Sean Sports. Hope you enjoyed, or I guess Seth and Sean Radio Show. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Yeah.